Did you know that most of the dishes in Tom Colicchio's craft restaurant are made and made in pots and pans? The braised short ribs, made and made in. The Rohan duck, made and made in. The heritage pork chop, you got it. Made and made in, which isn't surprising. Made In has been supplying top chefs and restaurants with high-end cookware for years for the simple reason that Made In makes exactly what demanding chefs are looking for. Their carbon steel cookware, for example, combines the best of cast iron and stainless clad, gets super hot, and is rugged enough for grills or an open flame. Best of all, Made In is sold online, so the professional-grade cookware is far more affordable than other high-end brands. If you want to take your cooking to the next level, remember what so many great dishes on menus all around the world have in common. They're made and made in. Save up to 25% this Memorial Day from the 18th until the 27th. Visit madeincookware.com. That's M-A-D-E-I-N cookware.com. Please check it out.
Hello and welcome to The Bookmonger. I'm John J. Miller of National Review. Thanks for listening. This show is a production of National Review, and we're recording from the studio of WRFH, the campus radio station of Hillsdale College. Our guest is Dave Barry, author of Swamp Story. Dave, welcome to The Bookmonger.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Dave, the plot of your new novel, now just out in paperback, involves gators and pythons and gold and cryptozoology and something called the Bortle Brothers Bait and Beer Shop. What's going on in this story? Set it up for us.
Okay, well, it's the swamp is the Everglades, which is right next to Miami. And I've always been kind of interested in the Everglades because if you've ever been to Miami, I know you have, you went to high school down here. There's this sudden demarcation where you're like, you're in this dense urban area, and then you're in a swamp with alligators and snakes and some very weird people. And so the idea originally was I was going to do a book that somehow brought these two very different but both very strange worlds, Miami and the swamp, together. And yeah, it's a bunch of guys out there in the Everglades. I call them Bortle Brothers Bait and Beer. And they're based on sort of real people who live out in the Everglades and try to eke out a living, basically extracting money from tourists going driving across between Naples and Miami. And there are, as you say, snakes, alligators, there's gold, there's some very strange people, and it all sort of comes together in a massive farce, really.
It's a hilarious book. As I was reading it, I found myself laughing out loud, even though I was sitting in a room by myself. And that tells me that's a funny book. When you write, do you laugh? Do you burst out laughing when you think of jokes, or do you write in complete silence?
Absolutely never laugh. It's kind of like what I compare it to is like if you were a magician and you practiced a trick, like make a coin disappear or whatever, over and over and over and over, and you finally got it right. When you finally got it right, you would not go, "Wow, how did I do that?" It's like when you write humor, it's sort of the same thing. You spend a whole lot of time trying to get the joke just right, get the humor of it, the rhythm of it. And then when you finally do, you go, "Okay, that's okay." You don't go, "Wow, am I excited about this?"
You tell a few climate change jokes at the expense of the New York Times. Is your goal with a story like this just to make readers laugh, or is there more than laughter involved?
There's more than laughter involved. I mean, I live in Miami. I live in South Florida. Everything here is almost sea level. We get told over and over and over again by experts, and especially by the New York Times, that, you know, we're going to be underwater. We're going to be underwater. And I just find it kind of funny that the people who keep saying this also seem to be moving here in large numbers. We're filling up with New Yorkers here in the area of Miami where I live, who presumably read the New York Times, but for whatever reason, they're coming here and buying waterfront property anyway. So, like, there have been times when, I haven't seen it so much lately, but when I was writing a book, it felt like every other day there was a front page story in the New York Times which linked pretty much everything that was happening anywhere in the world to climate change. And it just, after a while, just seemed funny to me. So I stuck a character in, and I think I named him Anthony Evander Cornwall, the most New York Times reporter name I could think up on the moment. And he comes down here and links, successfully links, everything he writes about to climate change.
You are a Florida man. You've spent most of your adult life there. You're the author of another book called Best State Ever. What's so great about Florida?
Well, it's funny. I mean, there are some things that are actually pretty great about Florida. Like the weather is nice, at least when, except during hurricane season, which runs from June through the following June. But other than that, the weather here is pretty nice. And the taxes are low. So that's good. But mainly what I love about Florida is it's funny. People come here from everywhere and they keep coming. They're coming in ever greater numbers. People don't come here, it feels to me like, for serious reasons. They come here to get away. They come here for fun. But you don't really think of it as a place you go to build your career, although I guess you can. But I think people come here more for like amusement and entertainment than in other states. And that means we sort of have a vibe, the state, of things can happen here. Anything can happen here, especially where I live, Miami, which is like the least boring place I've ever lived. It's just an entertaining state to live in. If you're a writer, my friend Carl Hiveson, great Florida writer, has said, if you want to write fiction, come to Florida. You don't need an imagination. Just subscribe to the newspaper. And nothing you could possibly make up will be weirder than the things that actually happen here all the time. And pretty much everything that I talk about in Swamp Story, I mean, the story itself is crazy, but there's no single thing or person in it that I don't think could really exist down here, except maybe the time-traveling chiropractor. And even that, I'm not sure. There's no such thing down here.
This is a message from our friends at American Habits from the State Policy Network. We the people, do you ever think about what that means and what happened to it? We the people certainly did not mean an imperial city full of unelected bureaucrats deciding everything from kindergarten curricula to nursing home funding formulas. We the people mean self-government, a free people deciding most things in their families and communities and delegating some authority to their towns and states while passing along just a small amount of that power to the national government. How did things get so upside down? At American Habits, we tell stories of real people with real solutions, all working to restore federalism and self-government. If you're a public official, come get involved. If you're a citizen, come and see the new standard for American leadership. No matter who you are, come help us renew the forgotten but not lost habit of American self-government. Visit AmericanHabits.org to learn more. That's AmericanHabits.org.
There's a saying about a story or an event only in America, and this book is like only in Florida could the events of this novel take place, and partly it's because of the Everglades, but it's more than just the Everglades.
Yeah, it's all around, you know. It's just like there's like one of the first stories I did when I came to Miami was in the 80s. That was the cocaine cowboy era. You were here during that era, I believe.
I was not one of the cocaine cowboys, though.
No, you were specifically not. I was going to rule you out, but almost everybody else besides you, John, was involved in the cocaine trade. No, but there was a lot going on. And one of the first stories I did when I got here, when I was a columnist for the Miami Herald, and I couldn't believe it. In the paper, there was a Citizens Crime Watch was meeting in Homestead City, south of Miami, and the chief of police was speaking to the Citizens Crime Watch, which was gathered on the patio of somebody's house down there. Nice neighborhood. Chief of police is speaking, and there's a droning sound overhead. And suddenly a thing thuds into this Crime Watch meeting. It's a 75-pound bale of cocaine that fell from a sky into the Crime Watch. It was a smuggler's plane coming over from the Bahamas that was intercepted by a customs service jet. And so the smugglers were throwing these bales of cocaine out as fast as they could. And one of them landed in a Citizens Crime Watch meeting. And like, if you were to write a movie with a scene in it like that and say the chief of police is almost hit by falling cocaine, the people in Hollywood would say, no, you know, we're not going to be able to sell that. That's ridiculous. But it happened. And that kind of thing happens here.
You had a long career in journalism, and that's when I first encountered your work, was reading it in South Florida in the 1980s. You still do some journalism, but now you write a lot of novels and fiction. Why did you make that turn from journalism and nonfiction to novels and fiction?
Well, journalism is a strong term to use for what I was doing, which was writing a humor column full of lies. But although some would argue that's not that different from journalism. But anyway, what happened was my column did really well. I was in a lot of newspapers, and it was great. It was a great part of my life. But after a while, I got tired of the obligation of constantly cranking out a column, and I just decided that, you know, while I was still successful and popular, before people told me, I was over the hill and should quit, I was going to quit that and move on to something else. And I moved on to books because I like writing books, and it's not as exhausting mentally. I can still every now and then I write a year in review that runs in a bunch of newspapers. And if I want to write a column, I can. But I don't have to anymore. And that was what changed for me.
One more question. Swamp Story, I think, is the greatest novel of Florida ever. But you mentioned your friend Carl Hyacin, who blurbs Swamp Story. And of course, he writes novels of Florida. What's the best book by Carl Hyacin? If somebody wants to read a great, funny novel of Florida, when they're done with Swamp Story, what book by Carl Hyacin should we read?
Oh, Skinny Dip, Striptease. Those are two that generally I think people, they're all great. I'm not going to single one out, but those two are good, like to get your toe in the water and get used to Carl, or just go on, you know, on Amazon or whatever and look at what the fans say. But he's written maybe, I don't know, a dozen or more really, really popular and very funny books. So highly recommend Carl.
The author is Dave Barry. The book is Swamp Story. Dave, thanks for joining us on The Bookmonger.
John, it's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to all of you for listening. If you enjoyed this show, please take a minute to leave a review. Your reviews help new listeners discover us, and that helps us keep this show going. We'll be back next week with a new episode of The Great Books Podcast.
Te presentamos a Daniela. A ella nada le sorprende.
Siempre estoy lista para lo que venga.
Por eso,
este año fui a Walmart a comprar todo para combatir mis alergias antes que comience la temporada de alergias.
Claro, porque Walmart tiene
productos de alta calidad para las alergias como descongestionantes, sprays nasales, antihistamínicos y más, y a precios muy buenos.
¿Y sabías que también tiene pickup y delivery? Daniela, ¿te sorprendiste?
¿Yo? No, ¿qué va? Claro que sabía que Walmart tiene pickup y delivery.
Bienvenido a una farmacia más simple. Bienvenido a tu Walmart.